Welcome to the Metaphysical Martini Show, where wit and wisdom come together to bridge the gap between the spirit realm and the physical world.
With Ani Avedisian, the Mad Shaman, a production of CosmicReality.com.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ani Avedisian. Welcome to Metaphysical Martini. Three parts spirit, one part rational mind. Add two drops of optimism. Give it all a good hard shake and pour. Dress it with the olives of grace and empathy. Sit back, sip slowly. Contemplate the wonder of cosmic co-creation. And a hearty hello to everyone out there. Hello, darlings. Hello, darlings. Hello, darlings. Thanks for joining me for yet another round of cocktails on this week's Metaphysical Martini, the show that tries to sort out what's true, what's woo, and what gets flushed down the loo in a world where we ask, why are so many ego entrenched? Why do so many judges need to be unbenched? When shown the facts and the bloopers, why do peeps choose to remain in a stupor? Why are they too proud to admit they are wrong? It's not as though their errors will be immortalized in song. And why are we all such gluttons? And what will it take to make us press that pause button? And the question that burns in everyone's rear end, what happened to those emails after Killary pressed send? Hello, everyone. Darlings, as always, we try to do all of this with as much dignity and decorum as can be mustered on any given day. We are rarely successful, I will admit to that. But on this show, the Metaphysical Martini Show, we are honor bound to give it our best shot. And we do love the odd shot now and then. Yes, we do. In fact, let me take a sip of today's drinky poo and see if it's a winner or a sinner. Hold on, my darlings, don't go away. Sipping is happening. Check the aroma, give it a little swizzle. You know, I could live with that, no problem whatsoever. It is summertime and our drinks are getting a little less alcoholic and a little longer and a little colder. So it's all good. Now, on today's show, what am I going to do? Do I have the foggiest idea? Well, let's see. We'll do our usual quack, which is questions, answers, and comments. Of course, we're going to have awesome American civics and history. We might have a silly poem if there's time. We'll probably throw in a weird and wacky tidbit from the anus of history. And of course, we shall end with my favorite part of the show, the cocktail du jour. But before we get into all that, I haven't really done a good pontificating session for a while, have I? No. So I think I'd like to pontificate a while on how fat we are here in America. And I'd just like to say, really and truly, it's unacceptable and we have to stop. I'm going to talk about that in a bit. I should say, if you're joining us for the first time, a warm welcome to you, a very warm welcome to you. But fair warning, this show is politically incorrect because we do not want to erode the intellect, and also because the host is rather direct and blunt in her demeanor. I'm not rude or crass or callous, no, I have class. But, you know, I don't do fancy frills, pretense of luxury, and froofy boofy stuff. I just get right into the main course and start chomping away. You see, darlings, martini heads, we're simple folk. We believe in common sense, common courtesy, common decency. We reject globalist totalitarianism, and we're committed to the restoration of the American Republic, and equally committed to taking it to the next level. You see, we martini heads, we know how the world works. We know who runs it. We know how it's run. We know why it's run. And you know what? We don't like it. We are here to expose deep state ideology and to destroy its machinery, all the while experimenting with and drinking lovely cocktails. Now, martini heads, we know the multi-party system is about divide and conquer. We know it's not about unity and balance. And we would like to see a government that is sort of more along the lines of an American assembly with absolutely no career politicians. And more than that, we would like to see our fellow citizens do their part in all levels of government, at the local, at the state, and at the federal, and later on in the intergalactic level, because that is the only way we will have government for the people, by the people. Do we have that today, darlings? No. What we have today is a poop fest of dysfunction fueled by greed, hatred, and fear. Is that a solid foundation upon which to build an enlightened and evolving society? It is not. But it is exactly what the dark establishment wants, and it's what it needs to stay in power. Warm bodies with cotton candy for brains, sitting obediently in front of their television sets, waiting for instructions on how to become better slaves of the system. Oh, govern me harder, Daddy. Give me new ways of hurting myself, just so I can be accepted by the other epsilons at the bottom of the ladder. You know, there's a little song somebody sang once a long time ago, and it was a bit of a joke, and it went something along the lines of, a slave is what I want to be. The television tells me how you see, what to think, eat and drink. Why have new ideas when I can just lip sync? I think that's what it was. Anyway, something very similar to that. And it's all very sad, isn't it? It's all very sad and somewhat disappointing. And sometimes it is challenging to step back and say, oh my God, Arnie, just shut up and grow up. Because this is just the universe expressing itself. And you know what? That is exactly what is happening. So, you know, we do need to step back. And we do need to step back and take that higher vantage point. We need to observe and not absorb. Because, my darlings, spirit sense is common sense. It may be a poop fest, but we don't have to stand in it. We don't need to wade through it to understand that it stinks. That much is obvious to any free thinker. If we rise above, we see the bigger picture. And once we understand this, the process does not disturb us quite as much. I'm watching people run around like chickens with their heads cut off, chanting for this cause or that cause or the other cause, and they're talking absolute rubbish, you see, because their heads are filled with propaganda and demagoguery. I like that word, demagoguery. I must use that more often. How does one have a decent conversation with a parrot? You can't. The parrot just gets upset and it squawks louder. Quack, 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 and it flies off the rails and it poops on everyone. Why are we wasting time with that? Parrots are not going to save the world. Parrots won't make America great again. But patriots will. Spirit-centered citizens will. Free thinkers will. Those who see through the mad matrix and want a better future for their progeny will. Well, that's why we're here. So let's get on with it. And today I want to talk about the rather large elephant in the room, America's epidemic of obesity. And I want you to know that I am more than qualified to speak on this topic because managing my weight is something I have struggled with for quite a while, especially after menopause. But I will tell you all, the woke and the non-woke, I no longer identify as a fatty. I'm done with that. You see, my poor little internal organs need a break from working overtime. I want and I'm working towards a healthy body to reflect my healthy mind. Mens sana in corpore sano, as the old Romans used to say, a healthy mind in a healthy body. So, Ani, yes, Ani, why have you decided to talk about this today? Well, I will tell you, but first I will have a little sip of my lower calorie drink. Hold on. That's just lovely for a summer's day. I want to talk about obesity today because I've just returned from spending 3.5 weeks with my mum in Central California. And we ate mainly fruits, vegetables, Greek cheese, small portions of meat and fish, and negligible amounts of something called lavash, which is delicious, actually. It's a paper-thin Armenian bread made simply from flour, salt, and water. And that's a healthy Mediterranean diet, and I think rightly so, since both Mum and I were born on the island of Cyprus. But I lost exactly 10 pounds in those 3 weeks, which made me very happy. And 10 pounds is a goodly chunk of the 55 I have to lose, so 45 more to go, and probably an extra 5, just to be sure, hey, why not? So, Ani, are you obese? No, I'm chunky. I'm fat. I'm not obese, because I know what obese is. It stared me in the face in Central California every single day. So one night, Mum and I decided not to cook, and we wanted somebody else to do the washing up for a change. So we were in the mood for some Asian food, and we decided to try a better class of Chinese buffet. And, you know, it was fine for the price. It had lots of choices, lots of soups. It had a bunch of fried stuff, but it had a lot of healthy stuff, salads, sushi, I mean, so much more. And instead of dessert, they had fruit. So having started my health kick a month prior to playing buffet, I made excellent choices. I'm very proud of myself, really. I had a light broth. I had a little grilled fish. I had a vegetable salad. I had some rice noodles. A little fruit salad. I did have one naughty moment. I ate a meat-filled dumpling. I think it's called shashubao. It's this big, fluffy white dumpling with meat inside. It was wicked and it was quite lovely. Mum also showed great restraint, all things considered. And we both abstained from booze and we drank jasmine tea. And as we sat there, looking at each other, feeling good about ourselves, we took some time to quietly observe the other diners. America, we have a problem. The land of the free and the home of the brave has become the land of the fat headed to an early grave. Now, both Mum and I, we admit to being a few pounds over optimum, but nothing compared to what we saw. Nothing compared to the wibbly-wobbly, jiggly-wiggly mounds of flesh on display at the buffet. To be honest, I don't honestly know. I mean, how are some of these people still alive? How do they wash themselves or manage the basic functions for hygiene? And please, before you get triggered and get your panties in knots, this is not an insult or a condemnation. It is a statement of fact. Something is very wrong here. Now, I'm not completely thick. I understand if you consume more calories than you expend, you will put on weight. I understand this because I allowed it to happen to me. But my question is this. Given what we saw that day, and many days, actually, there, is it physically possible for one human to eat the amount needed to grow into a wobbly lump of lard? I mean, surely not. One would have to spend the entire day eating disgusting apologies for food and remaining completely immobile. Surely death would come sooner than later. I need to understand why we are such a fat nation. Is it just the emotional component? I do not deny there is an emotional component. I've been a counselor, a chubby little counselor, for many years now. I know that we humans engage in many dysfunctional ways to fill the void in our lives, that gaping hole that comes with the false ego telling us we deserve better. And we do deserve better, but as the current criminal puppet administration has shown us in no uncertain terms, self-sabotage is not building back better. I'm sure each individual has their own excuse for obesity. I have no excuse for mine. I have a good reason. I know exactly what I did, and I regret it, but life moves on. And in time, I figured it out. I made changes because I learned to love myself. I learned to accept myself in all my glory, past, present, and whatever the future may hold. I learned self-respect. I learned to do the right thing for me and me alone. And that helped me to find the authentic self. You know, and the authentic self, the one aligned with the divine, is the only self I wish to present to the world. I am not an actor. I will write my own story and my own lines, and I will decide when my show is over. I took a long, hard look at myself and made the necessary changes for the right reasons. And for me, there is no going back. Now, for me, it wasn't about diets, which rarely work, or calorie control, or even exercise, which I highly recommend. It was about spiritual nourishment. Because how many people do you know that lost a bunch of weight and after about a year put it all back on? I know quite a few. I was one of them. You lose weight, why? You lose weight to feel better about yourself. But you still hate yourself, so you put it back on. Again, every person has a different excuse for that. And as we all know, individualized assessment is the key that unlocks the remedy. While we all explore our own issues around obesity, shall we see what else can be done to smooth the process? Because what I saw at that Chinese buffet was surreal. Big tubs of wobbly flesh and swollen feet and hands sticking out of the big wobbly flesh, piling their plates as high as Mount McKinley, chowing down, then going back for more. It was heartbreaking and disturbing to see people in so much pain. Now, the concept of all you can eat, it's a bit of a sticky wicket for me. You see, the mind says, I have paid X amount of dollars for this feast, and I'm going to get my dollar value out of it before I leave. So peeps find themselves eating far too much, I mean, of course, but also eating things they would never normally eat, just to justify the asking price. Now, if you have the appetite of a small bird, an all-you-can-eat buffet is a waste of money. This is about people who are struggling with, you know, obesity. The appeal of the buffet should be in its variety, don't you think? Not in the all-you-can-eat. So would it be helpful if we change the name to variety buffet or there's something for everyone buffet? Do we always have to appeal to mankind's baser instincts? Well, of course, the establishment goes out of its way to appeal to our base instincts. Fat people are more prone. If you're fat, you're fat, right? That's just, don't be offended by the truth. Fat people are more prone to disease. And the pharmaceutical industry is a big cash machine funding a dark agenda. In the last 40 years or so, obesity is off the charts here in America and rising, and unfortunately, it's spreading to other countries. Do we have healthcare anymore in America? Not really. We have built palaces, which we call hospitals, and we go there to worship our pain and worship our dysfunction. You can't deny that the term healthcare is a fraudulent term, because we are not healthier. Quite the opposite, in fact. So what can we do to stop Americans from eating themselves to death? Well, you know, I have some ideas. Here we go. First off, I think, as a nation, we eat out too much. Even in this, you know, dreadful economy where people have to make a decision between utilities, gas for their car, and food, the restaurants are full, but it's not the better restaurants that are full. We eat out a lot, and when we don't eat out, we get prepared food from the supermarket, right? Now, prepared food, if you read the labels, it is very highly seasoned and not always the best quality. And it tastes good because of fat, salt, and sugar and every conceivable combination thereof. And prepared food typically has 40% more calories than food made at home. Americans have developed a dangerously sweet tooth. And all those prepared sauces and flavorings contain a great deal of dangerous, highly addictive refined sugar. And sugar excites the system. And no one can be functional in a constant state of excitement. If everything you're eating has sugar in it, and pretty much unless you're cooking it yourself, it does, you are never going to be stable in your mind or your body. You're always going to be in a state of jitteriness and always hungry and addicted to more sugar. So as we eat out mainly at fast food restaurants, it's even worse, isn't it? Because in my opinion, these places exist for emergencies. Emergencies. I'm in the middle of nowhere. There is only McDonald's. Oh my God, what could I possibly eat there? Maybe a piece of lettuce and a coffee. These places are for emergencies. And when you're traveling and when you're in a hurry, eating fast food should be the exception, not the rule. Excuse me. Let me have a little sip of my low-calorie drinky poo. Hold on. What else has changed so much? Well, I will tell you, it's portion size. Portion size has increased dramatically over the years. So if we look at a typical burger, fries, and drink combo, you know, America's favorite little combo, back in the 50s, these portions were actually one third to one half less in size. Back then, a burger might have weighed about, well, between 4 and 6 ounces. And a side of fries weighed about 2.5 to 3 ounces. And the sugary soda pop of death beverage was about 7 to 8 ounces. So today, we're looking at burgers weighing in at 12 ounces, fries at 6 to 7 ounces, and that nice refreshing soda pop beverage of death is now a bloody great big gulp weighing in at about 32 to 42 ounces. And that is absolutely insane. We have become an insane nation of insane people eating insane amounts of bad food, which excites the brain and demands more. And no wonder people voted for Biden. This needs to stop. Because if America falls into the ocean, it won't be because of climate change, which is a hoax anyway. It will be because we're too fat and the weight of our bad decisions crash the country into the watery depths. And there goes all hope for the world. So you see, my darlings, we have to lose weight to save America and consequently save the world. Now, what else? Ah, yes, those sugary soda pop beverages of death. Number three, we drink too much of that stuff. Now, the companies that produce these beverages have started making half-size cans, and I applaud that. It's a good thing. But, you know, it's not just the soda pops which contain all the sugar. You need to check the sugar content on all your prepared drinks. And you might want to take a look at actually what is in Coke these days, what is in Pepsi these days, what is in those little fizzy drinks, because it's not as it was in the old days. I'm pretty sure these drinks, if you drink them regularly, they are embalming us from the inside out. Check the labels, you'll be surprised. We have a diabetes type 2 epidemic on our hands. We do. The things I saw, I mean, that meal was worth every penny. Fat parents, many, many fat parents, and they produce these fat children. So I'm at the buffet watching chunky parents load up their chunky children's plates with chunk-producing food and giving them big sugary milkshakes and sodas. And these poor little children look like Jabba the Hutts in the making. Can you not see this is cruel and unacceptable to destroy your children's health in this way? You're condemning them to a lifetime as cash cows in the apology that passes for healthcare in this country. You don't need sugary pop. It doesn't make sense to have a burger, which is savory, and fries, which is savory, and then have something sugary. Have an iced tea. Have water. Water is lovely. What else? Food has become expensive, which is, of course, by design. And so what does that mean? It means healthy food is 3 to 4 times more expensive now than bad food. We must learn to make better choices, America. And we must learn how to cook at home without all those prepared sauces and flavorings. You don't have to be a Michelin star chef to steam or stir fry green vegetables. You can watch a video on how to correctly grill or bake fish and meat. Another video can teach you how to prepare grains. And another video can teach you how to correctly combine food groups for maximum nutrition. There are thousands of how to cook videos. And wouldn't it be better to know exactly what goes in your food? How many parents today think they have time to teach their children to cook? Oh, I don't have time. I don't have time. How many of you involve your children in the cooking process? You assume they're not interested, but trust me, they are. They are because they're children, and cooking is a creative process, and kids are naturally curious. Why wouldn't they want a say in what they eat? You know, and parents say to me, we work all these jobs, etc. My kids eat only chips and tater tots. Well, I'm going to assume that you're the worst cook ever. Because if that's all you know how to prepare, you're condemning your kids to a lifetime of disease. We have to adjust our lives to raise our families. Don't tell me money, I don't have money. I don't have money either. But somehow or another, it always works out. We're not doing right by our kids, letting them get away with chips and tater tots. But Arnie, I can only afford pasta and potatoes. I too have been through some very rough patches. I know what it's like to budget. But if we can afford pasta and we can afford potatoes, we can afford some vegetables to mix in with it. Preparing healthy meals is not particularly challenging. We are all tired at the end of the day, and at the end of a long day at work or school, we deserve a healthy meal, not a load of crap on a plate. Does it require extra effort? Yes. Well, if you're not prepared to make the extra effort, why did you start a family? And it's not just for the children, for heaven's sake. Single people deserve good, dense nutrition. Couples deserve good, dense nutrition. Your pets deserve good, dense nutrition. Healthy food can be tasty. In fact, when you start eating healthy with no prepared sauces, you say to yourself, broccoli has a taste, cabbage has a taste, lettuce has a taste. Oh my God, meat tastes very good on its own. You will be surprised. What is the fifth suggestion we have here? Americans eat too many potatoes. Well, we do love potatoes. I love potatoes. But the problem is people don't eat small portions of lightly steamed waxy potatoes like the Yukon Golds. No, we chop them up and we fry the crap out of them and we put lots of salt and seasoning on them and we just eat them like that and have a glass of beer with it and it's delicious. But if you want to do that, do it once or twice a week because we eat too many potatoes. We can try to say, for example, have a burger and fries. I'll have a burger and a salad. How's that? You know, the other thing is we eat too much bleached GMO flour. Better grains do exist. Here's the test. If the bread you eat smells of chemicals, as most of them do, please consider making a change and either shell out for the good stuff or learn to bake your own, which is even better. It's not rocket science. It really isn't. You could even get a bread maker. It's just much tastier. And it's much healthier, and you have total control of what's in your bread. What is the sixth point? You know, if something is bad for you, it's not a treat. It is not logical to say, I know that I'm allergic to white flour and sugar. I know that it hurts my body. but I've been so good I haven't had anything like that for 60 days, so I am now going to treat myself to a box of donuts. You see, if you're in good shape, the occasional donut won't harm you. If you're not in good shape, it's a different story. Unless you're a dog. You know, treats should be the exception, you know, for humans, not the rule. For dogs, it's the other way around. I think you should give your dogs lots of treats. But unless we run around all day like a dog, you know, let's not do that. Let's watch also our snack food intake. We spend three times as much on sweet and savory prepared snacks than we do on fruit, nuts, and cheese. Which in excess, all of these things, you know, fruits, nuts, and cheese, you don't want to eat a whole ton of those either. But what we're trying to get to is, can we eat as naturally as possible and throw out all the ultra processed stuff? Because then I think the medical industry would collapse and resort itself, because most of the problems are because of the food we eat, the beverages that we drink, and, you know, the chemtrails in the sky is another matter. All right, moving on. That was number six, I think. Number seven. We should all take a look at what our breakfast looks like. Does it look like a giant stack of pancakes or waffles with butter, syrup, two fried eggs and a side of bacon and maybe some hash browns for good measure? You know, if you are a carbo-loading Olympic athlete, that might be a very good breakfast for you, actually. But if you're obese or bordering on obese, that is an early grave. The first meal of the day should give us enough calories to get up an atom. But, you know, that depends on what you do after breakfast. Food is energy. Food should energize us, not put us to sleep. I'm getting a little dry. Let me have a sip here. What else? Well, number eight. Turn the television off. Turn the television off. Turn the television off. It bombards us with ads for unhealthy food. No one needs the deep fried chicken fried steak special at Fat Ed's Diner in Blubberville. I mean, what's wrong with plain roast chicken with boiled new potatoes and two servings of vegetables? Our taste buds will adapt to a healthier diet. They will, I assure you. If I can do it, trust me, anyone can do it. What else? Number nine, water. People say to me, I've actually heard people say to me, but Ani, I'm allergic to water. And that's pretty much when I pick up a chair and hit them on the head. Water is the best drink out there. Stay hydrated throughout the day and stop eating at least 3 hours before you go to sleep. And make sure you have a good amount of water in the morning and some good amount of water at night and sip water throughout the day. It keeps things moving. And 10. I can't remember how many points I put here, but 10. Your creator adores you. So please stop hating yourself. Stop damaging yourself. If you are obese, losing all that weight can seem overwhelming, but it does not have to be. There is help. There is support. Even in the apology for our healthcare system, there are programs to combat obesity. Now, ultimately, we know diets don't really work if the core issue is emotional. So, you know, maybe it's time to have that discussion with spirit about why things are the way they are. And I'm going to throw in an 11 because this was actually very useful for me. While I was busy processing my emotional components and making changes, it was suggested that I do a full blood workup for food allergies, to see how much of what I was overeating was making me fat and how much of it was actually inflammation from eating all the wrong foods. And I have to tell you, it is the best $600, excuse me, that I have ever spent, because it worked like magic. Once I eliminated the stuff I was sensitive to, the inflammation reduced significantly, which motivated me to keep going. And today I can look in the mirror and smile. It's all working out and it feels good. And I want the same for all the folks out there struggling with weight issues, because honestly, fit and healthy tastes much better than fat and sweaty. This is clearly not an issue I'm going to dance around and avoid. It almost killed me. And if you let it, it will do the same to you. And if you need help and you genuinely want to make a change for the better and are prepared to drop the ego mind and step into your glory, drop me a line, ani@aniavadisian.com. But if all you want is hand-holding and validation for your poor decisions, do not drop me a line, because I can't help with that. Why feed the ego when the functional path forward is to learn how to love and feed the self? Every single problem we create for ourselves is because the ego is not understood, and if we cannot understand something, we cannot deal with it. If you're struggling with any problem, doesn't matter what it is, too much weight, too little weight, addiction, inability to break destructive patterns, you can spend years and thousands of dollars in therapy, and of course your ego would love that. Or if you're truly ready to let the spirit inhabit the human, you can join my Ego Busters group. I'm not joking. I have an Ego Busters group. Spirit sense is common sense, my darlings. Now, let me tell you a little bit about this group. We're currently wrapping up our second year as a Course in Miracles group, and we had a lot of fun with that. But that group will now become the new Ego Busters group, starting August the 12th, 2024. And we will meet via Zoom every second and fourth Monday of each month at 4 p.m. and 7 p.m. Pacific time. The content will be the same for both time slots, but we just want to accommodate as many people as we can from the East Coast to the West Coast in USA. And of course, you're welcome to join us from anywhere in the world. And if you want to join and you can't make the time slots, you can receive the audio presentation. So if you're interested, drop me a line. It's really inexpensive. The cost per annum, August 2024 to August 2025, is $149, which is a steal, as it works out at about $6 a session. So email me if you're interested, and I'll send you details. And private sessions, of course, are offered at heavily discount rates for members of that group. I'm going to leave it there for the obesity, but you know, now that I'm beginning to lose the weight, I just feel like a sane person again. I can think again. I can move. People, we've got to fix this problem, America. We are the laughing stock of the world, our all-you-can-eat buffets. We're going to have to put a stop to that. All right, moving on. It is now time for Quack Questions, Answers, and Comments. If you would like to share your concerns with martini heads across the globe, write to me, because nobody else will answer you if you don't, ani@aniavadisian.com, or via snail mail to Cosmic Ani, P.O. Box 714, Wilsonville, Oregon, 97070, USA. And please let me know if and how you wish to be identified, or I shall refer to you as omit personal details. So let's go ahead and shake up the fishbowl of perpetual perplexitaire and see what pops up. I'm a shaking it. All right. Our first one is from Rachel in Oxnard, California, who asks, Ani, do animals know they are animals? Rachel, yes, I believe they do. It seems to me they've figured out the difference between humans and animals quite well, you know, I think. Yes, they are much brighter than we give them credit for. Thank you for writing in. And I should mention, actually, that our next Martini podcast, which will be on June 19, almost the entire show will be devoted to all things animal. Joining me that day will be Kate Shaddock, formerly a Fortune 500 executive in engineering and finance, who is now an author, keynote speaker, and just basically a phenomenal medical intuitive and animal communicator. You know, she's the founder and the CEO of Radiant Animals. She's also an all-around good egg. I've known her for a while. I knew her when she was just starting out, and now she's famous. So all of you animal lovers and people with pets, send your questions in to me as soon as possible, and Kate will have answers ready for you. She's a lot of fun, is Kate, and I'm sure we're going to have a big blast together that day. So June 19th, 4 p.m. Pacific time on Cosmic Reality Radio, and of course available on multiple podcast platforms shortly after. And for all the peeps out there who tell me, I don't know how to do a podcasting platform, all the Metaphysical Martinis can be accessed from the homepage of my website, arnieavedisian.com. And of course, they're always archived at cosmicrealityradio.com. What else came in this week? I pontificated for too long. I hope I can get through all my content. What else came in this week? Let's see. This is from Carmel, or Carmel, who lives in Salt Lake City, Utah. And Carmel asks, have you ever had an out-of-body experience? Yes, I have. Too many to count. And also, so have you, Carmel, because astral projection is something we engage in, albeit unconsciously, in our sleeping dream state. We can train ourselves to do it consciously in our working dream state too. It is not as magical or fantastical as it sounds. You just need to understand the concept thoroughly and be patient as you develop the skill set. Thank you for checking in, Carmel from Salt Lake City, Utah. Here is an email from Omit Personal Details, who says, dear Arnie, I am 76 years old and have arthritis, and no matter how I try, I cannot rack the slide on any gun, and believe me, I have tried many guns. The range master suggests that I purchase a revolver. What are your thoughts? Aha! I can get behind this question. Okay. I think revolvers, or wheel guns, as we call them these days, I think they rock. The only issue for some would be capacity, because most take 5 or 6 rounds, although I have seen some smaller calibers take up to 8. But unless you're going to show up for a gunfight at the OK Corral at 76 years old, accuracy is more important than capacity. And, you know, and you become accurate with practice. So I can reload my Smith & Wesson revolver in about 5 seconds, and that's without a moon clip. But I can do that because I practice every single day until it becomes muscle memory. Most home defense scenarios are over in 2 shots. And if you're accurate, it's over in your favor, not in the scumbag's favor. So, dear Omit, I suggest going back to the range master and ask him to try out a few different revolvers. See what fits the best, because your primary firearm is a special little thing. It's your little chuchi pie. It needs to fit your hand just so. It needs to feel balanced. It needs to fit just beautifully in your hand, the way you stand. So, you know, just go to the range master. He'll bring out a whole bunch for you. You'll try them out. And gosh, thank you for writing in, and happy plinking. Just to continue with that, in my experience, when people first learn to shoot for defense, they're overambitious. For some reason, they think they want to become snipers overnight. And, you know, snipers belong in the military, and sniping is not personal defense. So first, go to a reputable gun range. Hire an instructor for an hour or two. Tell him or her what you want the gun for, and they will present you with a variety to try out, explaining the pros and cons, all the while observing you with a trained eye. Once that's done, you should sign up for a basic handgun safety class and follow that up with some one-on-one sessions. Because in my opinion, it's best to learn all the basics of gun handling early on, before you get into the bad habits and have to unlearn and relearn. We humans are not particularly good at that. And shooting is not just about firing the gun properly. You need to learn so much more than that. Is it a different mindset? You need to learn situational awareness. As good citizens, we are responsible for every shot we fire. Bullets can travel long distances, and they often go right through the target and can hit something else, and hopefully not someone or something you are fond of. You also need to know how to clean your gun, maintain your gun, how to deal with a misfire or a jam. And you don't have to be 100% accurate at 100 yards unless you're a hunter. Home defense situations are typically 10 yards or under. Say, if you shoot someone 50 yards out, even if they're coming at you holding a gun or a machete, there will be a court case. And this administration does not want armed citizens, it wants cannon fodder. And I also recommend getting that insurance through the USCCA. It costs as little as $29 per month, and it gives you up to about $2 million coverage for a Second Amendment supporting attorney. And that was a no-brainer for me. I would be a fool not to have that type of coverage, especially in today's corrupt world. The peace of mind USCCA offers is worth its weight in gold, and it's all for about $29 a month, for which you also have online training programs. And no, USCCA are not paying me to say this, okay? Just go and look them up and tell them I sent you, not that they would care, but it's always nice to know that you have the respect of your people. Okay, last question for today's show, and it's from Lydia in Akron, Ohio, who says, Arnie, my hobby is researching obscure facts about the Civil War. Ooh, goody. If you can answer the following question without doing any research, oh, I know where this is going. Hold on. Oh, that's a nice drink. If you can answer the following question without doing any research, I will send you a bottle of your favorite gin. Arnie, I know you're honorable. I know you won't cheat. Okay, no, I won't cheat. So here we go. Here's the question. After his home had been shelled during First Bull Run, where did William McLean move his family so the sound of battle would never reach them? Lydia, darling, get your shipping label ready because this is an easy one. He moved them to Appomattox, that's right. Damn, I almost forgot there for a minute. Appomattox Courthouse in Virginia. Appomattox Courthouse in Virginia. And I think, you know, that's where the Confederacy surrendered, I believe. So, and also, Linda, you're in luck. Or Lydia, sorry, Lydia, you're in luck. I drink Bombay London Dry Gin, and it's delightfully inexpensive, and it does the job as well as any top shelf gin. I, too, am a big fan of American trivia and historical titty-bitties. I love all that. So here we go. What else? Oh, that was it. Yes, that concludes Quack for the show. Thank you to all the martini heads for writing in. We wouldn't have much of a show without you. So keep those little emails coming. And together, we will sort out the true from the woo and the things that get flushed the loo. Do we have some weird and wacky tidbits for you today? I think we do. But first, may I just take a moment to remind you from time to time to visit my website, arnieavedisian.com, and sign up for my monthly newsletter, Monthly Messages, a very original title. I thought it up all by myself, but it will keep you in touch with all the things that are going on, what I'm doing, what the events are, and you will have access to specials and discounts that we don't always manage to get up on the website in time. So arnieavedisian.com, and please do visit Cosmic Reality Radio's channels to listen to past oldies of my Metaphysical Martini podcasts, and I have a whole bunch of stuff on Rumble, on Brighteon, and the English channel BitChute, where you can listen to my crazy poetry and watch all of my videos about life, the universe, and everything 101. All right, thank heavens, that's done with. Now, what's my short, weird, wacky tidbit today from the anus of history? Well, this isn't really much of a historical reference. This is something, a link that my partner sent me. It was just so funny. I couldn't stop laughing. This happened in Brazil. So, a woman was arrested in Brazil on Tuesday night after she used a wheelchair to take a dead man into the bank in an attempt to get a loan. Employees at the bank in the Bangu neighborhood of Rio de Janeiro became suspicious of Erica de Souza Vera Nunes, and they called police. Paramedics responding to the scene found that the man in the wheelchair, identified as 68-year-old Paulo Roberto Braga, had been dead for several hours. So here we go. Is this chick delusional, or is she just trying to scam the, you know, scam the system because the system's so terrible? She takes her dead man into there and goes, uncle, sign, we're going to get a loan. I think we're only just beginning to see the effects of some of these vaccinations. I think we're going to see a lot more mental health issues crop up over the years. And now, if I can just squeeze it in, yes, I can. Let's move on to awesome American civics and history. You know, the cult of personality, you know, Trump and, you know, why do we persist in painting people glamorous? You know, when most heroes are just ordinary men or women with flaws intact who have decided to refine their focus and make a stand against injustice. So I found this yummy little book on one of my secondhand bookstore marathons, and I found this piece about George Washington, and it tickled me. So I'm going to share a few paragraphs with you. This book was published in 1976. Or 1975, which, if you can imagine, I think that's when Fleetwood Mac released that excellent LP called Rumours. Oh man, do I feel old. Anyway, the book is called The Meaning of Independence, and it talks about John Adams, George Washington, and Thomas Jefferson. And this is just a fun little piece about the true character of George Washington. I'll read as much as I can before our time is up. Here we go. The King of England, George III, was fond of farming. His favorite diversion was to ride about his lands, chatting with the tenants about the crops. Farmer George is what he called himself. His arch opponent, George Washington, had the same fondness for farming. He too enjoyed writing about his lands and talking about the crops. Indeed, there was nothing else he enjoyed quite so much. But there the likeness ceased, and among the many other matters that differentiated George Washington from George III, none was more striking than his greater dignity and reserve. George Washington would never have taken the liberty of calling himself Farmer George, nor would he have allowed anyone else to do so. Even his closest friends took care to keep their distance, and those who forgot to were apt to be brought up sharp. A familiar anecdote, although perhaps apocryphal, well illustrates Washington's customary posture towards himself and toward others. During the meeting of the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia in 1787, a group of Washington's friends were remarking on his extraordinarily reserved and remote manner, even among his most intimate acquaintances. Governor Morris, who was always full of boldness and a bit of a wit, had the nerve to disagree. He could be as familiar with Washington, he said, as with any of his other friends. But Alexander Hamilton called his bluff by offering to provide a supper and wine for a dozen of them if Morris would, at the next reception Washington gave, simply walk up to him, gently slap him on the shoulder and say, "My dear General, how happy I am to see you look so well." On the appointed evening, a substantial number were already present when Morris arrived. He walked up to Washington, bowed, shook hands, and then placed his left hand on Washington's shoulder and said, "My dear General, I am very happy to see you look so well." The response was immediate and icy. Washington reached up and removed the hand, stepped back, and fixed his eye in silence on Morris until Morris retreated abashed into the crowd. The company looked on in embarrassment, and no one ever tried it again. It seemed a most un-American reaction, not the sort of thing that Americans like to see in the men they honor, certainly not the sort of thing one would look for in the leader of a popular revolution today. Yet Americans then and since have honored George Washington far beyond any other man in their history. Moreover, he earned the honor and his dignity and reserve, the aloofness that still separates him from us. It helped him to earn it. How this came about is part of a larger story of American independence. The story of how the American Revolution transformed some of the least lovable traits of a seemingly ordinary man into national assets. For beside his aloofness, Washington had other characteristics, which at this distance appear less than admirable, but which served him well and the nation well in the struggle for independence. Perhaps the most conspicuous of these traits, conspicuous at least in his surviving correspondence, was an unabashed concern for his own economic interest. Although Washington was fair in his dealings and did not ask favor of any man, he kept a constant, wary, and often cold eye on making a profit, ever suspicious, and not always without reason, that other men were trying to take advantage of him. Like most Virginia planters, he complained that London merchants were giving him too little for his tobacco or charging him too much for the goods he bought from them. When he rented to tenants, he demanded to be paid punctually and dismissed men's inability to meet their obligations as irresponsibility and knavery. If a man was so foolish as to try cheating him, he was capable of a fury that comes through vividly in his letters, as when he wrote to one associate, "All my concern is that I ever engaged myself in behalf of so ungrateful and dirty a fellow as you are." In operating his plantation at Mount Vernon, he endlessly railed against having time wasters, wasters of supplies, wasters of money amongst his staff. "A penny saved is a penny got," he would say, or "many mickles make a muckle," by which he apparently meant that many small savings would add up to a large one. Even in dealings with his mother, he was watchful, for he thought she had extravagant tastes. He was ready to supply her real wants, he said, but found her imaginary wants indefinite and oftentimes insatiable. How very quaint. You should visit some secondhand bookshops once in a while if you don't already do that, and take a look at the American Civics and History. You will find some wonderful little gems in there. But darlings, we're done. I finished my drink, and that always means the end of the show. I do hope you enjoyed listening in as much as I enjoyed presenting, because I had a blast. I always do. Connecting with the Martini Heads is such a pleasure, and I hope we get to do this for as long as possible. Shout out to Mystical Wares in Mount Vernon, Washington, for making possible the intergalactic distribution of this show, mysticalwares.com. Online or on location, you'll be sure to give them a standing ovation. Today's real-life cocktail was Arnie's Summer Refresher, which is essentially a tall version of the classic Manhattan, and here's how you make it. One shot of your favorite whiskey or bourbon, quarter shot sweet vermouth, quarter shot dry vermouth, two drops of Peychaud bitters, club soda, and a Luxardo or other good quality cherry for dressing. Get a tall glass, put some cracked ice in it, add the bourbon and both types of vermouth, give it a bit of a swizzle, top it up with a club soda, give it another gentler squizzle, and then dress it with the cherry and enjoy. If you're watching your calories, halve the amount of liquor, and you still have a flavorful, refreshing, tall summer drink that won't knock you on your fat ass, because, you know, no one wants to see that. Darlings, I'm Arnie, mad as the day is long, Aberdissian. This was a Metaphysical Martini, a production of Cosmic Reality Radio, to whom we are most grateful. Mwah, mwah. Until we meet again, tell that Tedros chappie and his cohorts to stick their medical directives up their back ends, because sovereign beings will never comply with Luciferian demands. And while you are busy watching them squirm as their corruption is exposed daily, try to be gracious. And do it while letting the spirit inhabit the human.
You have- have been listening to The Metaphysical Martini with Ani Avedisian, the Mad Shaman, a production of CosmicReality.com.